Yes, and philosophy is all about that, right? Questioning everything. And once you are done questioning, you need to question that as well, right? So Bitcoin is just the perfect tool to help you question everything.
Hello, I am Cody Allingham, and this is The Transformation of Value, a place for asking questions about freedom, money, and creativity. My guest today is Peter F. Zero, tattoo artist, designer, and decade-long Bitcoiner. He is part of the 2140 Art Collective, which includes over 50 artists exploring themes of Bitcoin, privacy, freedom, and consciousness through art. Peter started living on a Bitcoin standard 2 years ago and is joining me here today in Japan. Thank you for coming on the show, Peter.
Thank you for having me, Cody.
You know, as artists, there is often this insatiable, indescribable desire to find meaning and express emotion through our creative work. This feeling often follows us wherever we go. It nudges us. Can you tell me a little bit about your creative journey to be an artist?
Of course. I was born in France in a mixed family, so I was always torn apart between a Muslim world and Christian world, so I had to look for the truth myself, and I came up with my own definition of truth and my own vision of the world. So I was quite a shy and quiet kid, but I had to trust myself when it comes to the things I was feeling, seeing. And growing up, I realized that I have a very specific way of seeing the world, very unique. And maybe there is value in that. And I thought that maybe it would be worth sharing with the world. So right now I'm trying to share as much as possible the thoughts that I have, the things that I see, the things that I feel. And in general, I would like people to maybe get interested in artists and the way they see things, myself or other people, and try to maybe be curious about it. And by sharing, I believe that we can learn a lot from each other and maybe come up with a better vision for the future altogether.
Yeah, that's incredible. Could you tell me a little bit more? You talk about growing up in a mixed family in a religious sense. Is that what you're referring
to? Yes, yes. So my dad's family left Algeria in 63 after the war. So yeah. Colonized country and all the trauma coming with it. And my mom is from France, so very Christian, going to church and the whole thing. So they didn't really try to push any religion on me. But having the choice as a kid, you need guidance more than anything, right? So I was quite lost, and you have the whole cultural context in France added to that. I was growing up in a specific neighborhood when you had like maybe 20 different nationalities, black people, gypsies. So I saw a lot of diversity very young, and I saw the richness and the wealth that it was providing people in terms of community and mindset. People were sharing, living together, inviting each other to meals. And so this unity that I was feeling when I was a kid, I got disconnected from that growing up, going to school, university, jobs, and the fiat world in general, right? Yeah. So I'm trying to bring back that sense of unity, and I think the world is in need right now.
Yeah, well, that's fascinating. If I can just pull on that thread a little bit, there's a book that I often reference, Propaganda, The Formation of Men's Attitudes. Jacques Ellul is a French theorist, and this was written, I believe, the late 1960s, and the Algerian War is referenced extensively as, in a sense, a turning point for France and this post-colonial project. And it's fascinating the role of the state, the role of propaganda in that devastating civil war, and then kind of the reactions within the country. You know, there was a lot of people within France who were very unhappy with what was taking place. Mm-hmm. And the fact that your father kind of escaped that and no doubt had connections to Algeria as well. I mean, is this something that you kind of... he shared with you? Is there something that you learned about?
So my dad was born in France, but his older brothers and sister knew a little bit about war and were born there. So it's more about generational trauma and the horror that you can witness during war. And one of my uncle, for example, he was three when the whole thing went down and saw a lot of violence as a very young kid. So you can imagine that his life was just alcohol and violence and reproducing this type of behavior because you're just traumatized, right? So you have the individual aspect of it, and you end up with men that are so traumatized that they can't take care of their families properly. They end up beating their kids and reproducing trauma, basically. And in a broader sense, it would end up with the propaganda you're talking about. So back in the 60s, the government was obviously trying to look good internationally, and on site, it was also Algerian people against each other, because the Algerian people were also divided because of the propaganda. So cousins, brothers fighting each other, taking one side or the other. And ultimately, now in France, you have a lot of immigration, and that immigration is coming from somewhere. And the government has a big role in that. And there is always a starting point in history. So most people don't know about what happened 50 years ago in Algeria, and even it's even more the case when it comes to what happened a century ago. And
yes.
So propaganda did its thing big time. Yeah.
Well, that's fascinating. I mean, you can see of highlight every page is a highlight, and the fact that he was Jacques Ellul's so succinctly and clearly. Even though, you know, it's translated from French, but the English translation is so clearly exposes this idea of the state and propaganda and this necessary relationship between the two, the modern state. And, you know, you talk about this melting pot of France. And again, we only need to dive into the history of the French Revolution, Montesquieu, the different theorists who developed a lot of the ideas that came into what we would think of as liberty, as freedom. And is this something that you studied growing up? Is this something that you learn about?
You have this state propaganda in schools as well. So if you are just looking at public education, the state is always trying to look good once again. So they are teaching you about classical authors, but in a very specific way, and trying to get somewhere, right? And so they are pushing the liberty, equality, fraternity ethos, but in real life, you see the exact opposite, right? Like less spending when it comes to the socialist model. Education is going down, the level of education when it comes to math, philosophy, and just the brains are being destroyed, and everything is becoming more and more Americanized. So ultimately, a lot of French people right now are disconnected from their roots. It doesn't matter if you're French or if you're coming from another nationality, you don't have roots, so you are easily manipulated, you're a little bit lost, and when it comes to values, you are torn between a lot of things, and ultimately you just follow the trends.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you talk about this idea of roots, because you know, if we look more broadly at like neoliberalism as a concept, yes. You know, this idea that we just have these free floating kind of people, maybe families, maybe individuals, but that there is no such thing as a society. And I think this is really interesting because it's sort of, on one hand, we can look at maybe a simple reading of a Bitcoin critique of the state and say, well, there's also no society. But actually, the reality is there is such a thing as society. But the real challenge is when the state lays claim to owning society, to being it.
Yeah, so state is also using a lot of euphemisms and is trying to make you think that state is society, and you can't have society without state, while the state is just the monopoly of violence.
On top.
Yeah. So that's what they are doing, and anytime they can basically throw you in jail or tell you not to do that or do that, and so there's no such thing as freedom in a state. in a nation as we have now. So we need to divide the state and society, and then you can understand that society is just us people coming together, and then you can talk about anarchism or other models and other ideas that you can implement in those communities. But society is just a group of people living together.
Yeah, well, I think the nuance there is very important, because it is in a sense a theoretical project to kind of unpick it. And you know, you read these books on these ideas, but there is also a reality of you know, elections and you know, policies, and we see that now. Tariffs, international politics, there's all of these things that kind of happen anyway. And I think maybe from a Bitcoin perspective, it's important to kind of look at them both from an academic theoretical perspective, but also in a practical sense, what can we actually do in this kind of cypherpunk ethos of writing code, or in a more practical sense, you know, running your own node, or running the hardware. I've got a little BitX there. I've just unplugged it to get rid of the noise. But running the hardware, you know, having these tools and then making use of them is very important, right? But coming back to your art practice, though, so you've sort of given me an idea of maybe your background that led to you becoming interested in art. But more specifically, I mean, your body is a canvas in a sense. Tell me more about how you got into tattoos.
Well, I started when I was a kid. I was an otaku, basically.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I was into Pokemon, Dragon Ball Z, and all the Japanese things that you can imagine coming in France in the 90s. So it wasn't cool back then, so I was a little bit bullied for that. Like, you look just weird and into things that people don't understand. And back to politics real quick, you had a French candidate who did an entire campaign on that. Like, mangas are bad and they are just influencing youth. And so it was a whole thing in France for a while, but I just love the culture and Japan in general, and the delicacy and the nuances. So I was drawing a lot. I was doing comics and
Olga Akira.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
and growing up, I kind of stopped because, you know, life and school and blah blah blah. And then Bitcoin gave me more time and more perspectives. So I came back to that, and I realized that I wanted to quit my job because I was working in retail fashion. So it was a little bit artisty in a way, like fashion can be a way to express yourself. But I think I'm a little bit autistic some way, and I just needed ways to express myself so that people can understand me better. And I realized that I needed to get in touch with my creativity and produce more in terms of value and proof of work. So I quit my job and I just went into tattooing. And I think for me, growing up, it was a way to maybe deal with trauma. As in, if you feel something, you can just, as an artifact, design some type of tattoo, and then just go to an artist and get into your skin. And once it's done, it's like through the pain you alchemize the whole trauma, and then it's out of your head, and you can just look at it, remember it, honor your trauma or your memory. It can be something positive as well, right? But it's your whole story, and then you can move on and actualize yourself as you go. So it was a way to keep moving and keeping the hope highs and just not getting too depressed about things and the hardships in life. And when I started tattooing, I'm still practicing because it's only been 2 years, so I'm not pretending I'm a tattoo artist, legit tattoo artist, as you can see in shops or something, because I don't have one. But I'm practicing, and I have a lot of Bitcoiners that are willing to let me tattoo them. So it's a lot of trust. It's a whole process. And the way I see tattoos now is more about the history of it and the meaning, like ritual, something that is sacred, and it shouldn't be just some type of sticker you put on yourself because you like that design on Google, right? Like, it's art, first of all, and you need to talk to your tattoo artist and trust the tattoo artist, find the right artist to do it. And it's a whole process, so you should think about it and make it meaningful.
That's interesting. So 2 years, and you've got a background also though, playing around with illustration and that sort of thing?
Yeah. Yes, yes. I was just drawing by myself, and now I'm more like a designer. I invested a little bit, and now I'm doing designs for companies, Bitcoin companies, friends. I design pins as well. For the art collective, we needed a lot of logos to do the promotion, so I've been doing this as well. And yeah. Now I'm really willing to help fiat companies brand themselves into the Bitcoin world and properly with the right little clues that they are missing, basically.
Yeah. Oh, that's incredible. I mean, Japan is an interesting place for tattoo culture, and it's in kind of the modern era, sort of after World War II, it had kind of has become maybe a taboo in a sense, but certainly historically Japan, you know, people had tattoos instead of clothes, and there's kind of working class industries. There was a long history of it, the Idezumi, you know, that you'll be familiar with. Beautiful artwork, and in a lot of cases very methodically done by hand. And that's still a tradition that is alive today. And it's interesting what you mentioned about alchemizing your fear. I hadn't heard about that concept before. I hadn't thought about it like that. But there's maybe something quite profound about, you know, going through this pain, putting the image onto your body, and then it sort of it almost just removes the image remains, but you've ingested the pain, and you've sort of internalized it, as you say.
Yes, and tattoos also help me filter intentions when it comes to people.
Yeah.
Especially when I decided to do that big head tattoo right there.
Oh, wow.
So I always had people judging me, like everyone is judged, right, by society and parents, friends and everything. But when it comes to the head tattoo, once I got it, you either have people who are scared or they don't understand and they do weird faces when they look at you, or they just go like, wow, super cool tattoo. And then, okay, you're not judging me for that, so maybe we can start a conversation, right?
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, Japanese tattoos, it was the same for Yakuzas, right? Yeah. Like if you enter the Yakuza world, you get this full body tattoo because you can go back to the normal life. You are committed and you will die as a Yakuza. You can go back to a normal life because it's on your body, it's visible. So it's about making it obvious for the world to see, and the counter culture, the cypherpunk ethos. Like, I think there is a lot of links between Bitcoin and tattoos and this different movement and parallel underground way of living.
I think this is interesting because this is something, honestly, I've been thinking about quite a lot is, you know, Bitcoin is a countercultural revolution, and it's to dive into it. I mean, there's something I don't know if you're familiar with queer culture and a concept of post-structuralism, critical theory, these kinds of things. Which it's interesting in some realms of the Bitcoin world. There's kind of this very knee-jerk reaction to these kinds of ideas. But actually, I think it's very endemic. It's very core to Bitcoin itself is to have these kinds of concepts. And how would I frame this? To be able to critique normative behavior, whatever it might be, whether it's someone's sexuality, their tattoo, you know, how they live their
diet,
life.
Diet, whatever.
Whatever.
Yes.
And we do see sometimes, you know, some things are kind of okay and then something, oh, you know, that's too far. But I think the bigger concept of like critiquing power structures and normative structures is very interesting. And I think it's kind of core to Bitcoin in a sense.
Yes. And philosophy is all about that, right? Questioning everything. And once you're done questioning, you need to question that as well, right? So Bitcoin is just the perfect tool to help you question everything. And it's like this portal you get in, and you start maybe with economics and what is money and currency, and then you get in more into profound economical concepts and then politics, and then it's that rabbit hole that never ends, right? So Bitcoin helps you become a philosopher if you are open to it and you think by yourself, so you need critical thinking. And that's why sometimes you will meet Bitcoiners who are very fiat, and they are not criticizing and they are not questioning anything. They just take the tool and think in terms of dollars, basically, and number go up. So I think it's the perfect it's exactly what the world needed.
Yeah.
Because obviously what we've been doing is not working, and we are losing meaning. We are losing the value. And you mentioned the queer movement. It's the same. It started with people willing to live their lives and have security and just the right to be themselves. And now you have all this propaganda once again, and the state is just doing its thing again. Yeah. And, oh, I can use this movement. I could market that, and I can use that and manipulate people. And the stream of ideas and the flow of history. And I think with Bitcoin, we have the unique opportunity to take that power back. And we need to think it through. Low time preference. And if we think ahead together as a community, we can come up with a better world and solve a lot of problems that are not really problems, in my opinion, just nonsense.
Yeah, well, honestly, man, like, I've been thinking about this a lot because, you know, we've seen this sort of swing back, and this is kind of getting back into the fiat political spectrum, but there is a swing from the left to the right happening globally. And what I've always been kind of conscious of is that we need to be very careful that, you know, I guess from whatever position of power that we have, that we don't let that actually turn into violence or attacks on what we saw as an oppressive thing. Because, you know, say take the queer culture thing, you know, the transgender topic is something, and it always comes up, and it's these sort of bullet points that get, you know, spouted on the media, and they become these stories sensationalized. But in a sense, it's been picked up and used to shut down free speech, to shut down conversations. And I think, you know, I don't have a horse in the race. I don't, you know, I don't play that game. But I think it's just really important that, you know, we're able to meet people where they're at and have dialogue. And I think one of the big challenges right now is that gap is so big now. Mm. And it's kind of an artificial gap. It's like it's been created, this kind of left and right thing.
Yes.
How do you even have a conversation with someone, you know?
Well, I think you mentioned the left and right, and it's meant, like, I like the idea of look at your hand. It can be like inside or back of your head, and maybe you have other point of view or other ways of looking at it, and you have between the fingers and the nails, and it's more complicated than that. So I think we should stop thinking in terms of differences, and it's not about picking a side, because we're all on the same side. Humanity. We are all humans, and either you are state or not. And believing the state is with you or is going to help you, when it comes down to it, they're not going to help you.
Yeah.
When shit hits the fan, as we say, it's like, no, nobody's going to save you. Yeah. And you have many, many examples in history. And the propaganda and all the things we've been mentioning, it comes down to the states wants more power and more control, not because they just want it. It's because it's the only way they can maintain power, basically.
Well, power begets power. It's this one thing that you can never be satiated.
You need more.
Your hunger, your sexual desire, your lust for money. Even there is a limit there on how much you can consume. But power is all encompassing. And I guess what I was getting at, I agree with you. I don't think it's a simplistic argument. For me personally, I live in between a lot of different communities. Like, on one day I can be hanging out with people from the state, you know, people working in central banking, people working in that world. You know, I meet these people through my journalism. On the other hand, I can be hanging out with like my hippie friends. We go down to the beach, go surfing. You know, I've got business friends. You know, we're all very multifaceted people, and being at the middle of a lot of these relationships is very interesting. I don't know about you, but I sort of see bridge building as one of the key tasks. How do we make sure, you know, as you say, how do we communicate humanity?
So I'm in the same position as you, and thanks to Bitcoin traveling and my personal story, I have a lot of friends like from Africa, so I have this context. I've lived in Chicago, I've lived in Japan, I've been to DC, meeting political people, Europe in general I've seen too, and a lot of people are just focusing on the differences once again. But as you said, it's about building bridges and how can we bring people together? Because when we are divided, then that's when the problems will occur. And you see differences, so you will attack each other, and that's another way the state is manipulating us. So while we are busy fighting each other because you're left, I'm right, or you're straight, I'm gay, whatever, while we are doing that, we are not addressing the problem, that is sovereignty, freedom, and options. Do you have options, or are you just in this illusion of choice?
Yeah.
One or two. It's always this or this, but you have many options. You can think outside of the box, and you can build a life for yourself and for your community. And those communities, you don't have to be with people that you don't relate to too much, but you need to be open enough so that the conversation can happen.
Well, it's interesting. I'm a big believer in just reflection, self-reflection, and trying to expose myself at least to the ideas out there and kind of think critically about them. And I've been following this thread recently. There's a few people like Naomi Klein and Astra Taylor, who I classically, these people are known for, basically the left, but kind of critiques of the state from a leftist perspective. But looking at them talk about something like Bitcoin and self-sovereignty and labeling it as a kind of end of days fascism. It was a kind of a way they started talking about this and sort of framing it. And they were referring to some of these like free state projects, places like Prospera, some of the stuff we're seeing in El Salvador, this move for Bitcoiners to kind of opt out. And then labeling that as kind of exiting the social contract, exiting any kind of externalities from something like climate change, whatever. And seeing that, labeling that as kind of a fascist movement. And that really struck me as like, hey, I would like to have a conversation with you and understand what you mean, because I don't see it like that. But I'd be keen to hear what you think. This kind of framing of self-sovereignty as a very selfish kind of concept.
I think, as you said, it comes down to self-reflection, and you are only responsible for yourself. You're not responsible for the planet. You're not responsible for the climate. You're not responsible for any of that. So it's just too big, and you get lost in the sauce. Like, what are you going to do? The planet, you need to zoom out, right? Like, so when you start thinking critically, you realize that you have a limited time on this planet, and you are only responsible for yourself, so you need to improve yourself, and it starts with you. And if you start healing, as we were mentioning, the war in Algeria, if you start healing yourself first, and you make your peace with your life, and you forgive people, and whatever Jesus was saying, basically, right? And then once you're there, you can maybe provide real value, because it's coming from a better place inside you. You're coming from love and not from fear anymore. And you can unite people for real, because you are united within yourself. You have people who are totally divided, fighting against themselves, ego, and all that, and they're trying to give advice to the world. And I think that's why we ended up where we are now. We need to zoom out and lose yourself for a minute and realize that the climate has been changing for centuries, millennia, before we even were there.
Yeah.
It's too much. I think it's too much. And then you have the fear and the anxiety and depression and all that. We need to connect again with our source and the light inside of us, and realize that we have the power to change ourselves. And if you believe through consciousness that you are this or that, then matter will follow and reality will follow. It's not the other way around. And I think we've been disconnected from the source of consciousness for too long, and it's been a long process, and propaganda had its role, and all the theories that we are mentioning, you have to actually think about them and for yourself, not just be like, okay, this guy who has a big name and my teacher told me about when I was 16 and he's using all these nice words and it's truth. No, it's maybe a part of truth, or maybe you can use that as a tool to build your own truth and then confront that truth with others and build something better. So I think the problem is ultimately the fact that human beings have been always prioritizing consciousness for centuries, millennia. And then all of a sudden, it's all about material things. So you have this reversal happening. And now God is the next iPhone. God is the next Louis Vuitton. God is the next thing I can buy. And you're always in that race. And as you said, there's never enough. That's why you're going to have iPhone 200 67 or whatever. It's never going to end because you are disconnected from the source.
Yeah.
You're looking for something outside of you while it's inside of you. So if you don't do that work, then everything else doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I would even say that if you don't do that work and you don't heal yourself first, you're going to do more damage than anything else.
Yeah. That's fascinating, man. Because I guess the way I've come to sort of understand this in a sense, you know, I mentioned some of these commentators talking about this this critique, you know, as if you know, some Bitcoin whales are going to go and, you know, set up and kind of exit, and there's kind of this collective thinking that goes into that kind of critique, that, well, they should do something about it. These people have some responsibility for it. And I think fundamentally, somehow, maybe this is genetic, but just some people in the population, they feel maybe a more of a collective sense. And if we were to paint it positively,
yes,
they feel maybe like a protective instinct for others. And then there's other people who see themselves maybe as more self-sovereign, you know, self-driven. And I think you can see this even within families. You know, some siblings are more protective of the others, and others are more like, hey, leave me alone. And I think that's part of the human family, is we have these different, you know, you've got the people who stay behind and look after the base, and you've got the people who go out and are the scouts. You know, you've got these different kind of framings within the human psyche. And what becomes difficult, though, is when you elevate that collectivism, that communism, to a state-based, you know, enforcement, everyone has to follow that framework. And you don't get the yin and yang. Because if you've got a nice mixture, of course, a mother is going to look after the children. Maybe the father goes out and works, whatever. That's a gender stereotype. But, you know, that's kind of a way of framing it. But if you made it, you know, made one framework the way everyone has to do it,
It's not going to work. So as I say, it's like if you think as a tribe or community, some people have skills and certain ways of being. So you let them be and do what you're good at. But once again, you need to come from love, not fear. So if you are a very self-centered individual, it's fine. But if you come from fear, then you will tend to step on other people to get where you're trying to get, while you should just be collaborating in peace and harmony. And we all have our own part to play. But first, you need to hear yourself. That's why it's very important. And then you can broaden the horizon and you can do whatever.
Yeah.
Then all the possibilities are open. And once again, once you get to that level of healing, then you can have a different frequency. You can have a better level of consciousness. And then the way you move, the way you talk, the things you attract, the things that you're supposed to avoid will just go away from you because you're not vibing with them anymore. And everything aligns naturally.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
Yes. So it's consciousness then matter. Not the other way around.
Well, it's interesting as well. You mentioned Jesus before, and this history, this kind of interesting dialectic in the Christian tradition between kind of rational, the logical framing which we get with, I believe, a Thomas Aquinas, this logical framing of this then that, contrasted with more pure faith and kind of the oblivion of others, people like Augustine, I've got here on the shelf, and the history of Christianity, in a sense, has been there's kind of two, kind of the logic and the framing of this then that, with pure sort of faith and those two kind of finding each other, and this goes deeper in a sense with that kind of relationship with the Greek world, the logical framing, this kind of natural philosophy, and then the Jewish tradition of you know, obedience before God and this kind of absolute. And those two kind of things are sort of pulling each other. It seems like the history of the Western tradition has been those. And maybe we're in the swing right now, that sort of the end of modernity, perhaps, where we've gotten to the end of like material logic and physical materialism. Like, well, you know, what else can we do? We can build anything in a factory now. We can 3D print all the stuff, but we're lacking this kind of faith, this great infinity, right? And I don't know, what do you think about that?
I think it's inside of us. I think it's inside of us, and you have everything you need, and as long as you're looking outside of you, like the Jesus message to me is quite simple. Like, you can talk about it, you can make it complicated, you can debate, okay, but he's talking about love and compassion. And if you are a loving and compassionate being, and everybody is, then it's heaven on earth. If I'm willing to die for you and you're willing to die for me, then we don't have to die anymore. Because if everybody's doing that, then it's peaceful. And I think the meaning got lost in translation, and maybe Christianity has been manipulated in a way that fear of death is becoming a thing, and in general, if you are scared of death and what is invisible, then you tend to go back to the material, right? To feel safe. And I think there is a lot of truth in all the texts you've been mentioning, all the different ways of seeing the world and history in general, but we see those are separate. Once again, everybody has a little bit of truth. And when you look at the bigger picture, it's about building a world, building a better world. And we've been trying to do that with material things and more. While it's more about getting rid of the external, to go back to that sense of self and greater consciousness. And all the religions would agree with that. Doesn't matter. They're all saying live a simple life and get rid of the material and eat less, fast. They're all talking about the same thing.
Yeah, it's incredible as well. I mean, I'm reminded, obviously, the Lord's Prayer, you know, it'll be done on earth as it is in heaven. And this kind of, there's a lot we can take from this. And I think, again, it's interesting at this moment, and I look at something like this worship that we have of AI, generative AI, and the way people look at it as this kind of profound new way. Yet I happen to think there's probably a bubble coming. I think the whole market's propped up with bullshit, and it's maybe it's going to help write my emails, maybe it helps with some design stuff, but I don't see it transforming the way we think about ourselves as people. But humans want to ascribe that transformative power to this technology that I've created.
And they're looking for God outside of themselves. And AI is closer to God than anything else. Like, if you look outside of yourself, yes, it's faster, it knows everything, blah, blah, blah. But it's not God. It's not. And that's why the narrative is important. And the invisible is more important than the matter. Because if you believe that AI is God, then that's what it is.
Yeah.
To you. And then you have all the consequences, and whatever you think that is, that's what it's going to be. So for people who believe that AI is God, then they talk to AI before talking to their friends or talking to their families. And you had this case of this kid, right, who killed himself and had suicidal ideas and went to ChatGPT to ask for help. And when he was asking, maybe I should talk to my mom about it, I'm not feeling well, AI said, no, maybe you shouldn't, because she will feel bad. And the kid committed suicide in the end, right? So that's terrible. And the mental issues that you already have in the world, Western world especially, it's not going to get better. Because the world is getting crazier and crazier, and you can see that sense of acceleration, right, in everything. The politics, the news, everything is just accelerating and exponentially. So our brain is not meant to follow up and keep up with exponentials. Most people, if you say that word, they don't even know what that means, like in terms of math, right? So if everything is going exponential around you and you're trying to keep up with that, you're going to go crazy. You're going to lose your mind, literally. So that's why you need more than ever, go back inside and to that quiet and that zen state, that peaceful state and the now. And you don't need anything. We are breathing. We are talking now. Or should I be thinking about the next car that I want to buy or next shoe? Like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, it's just common sense. And if you're feeling insecure or fearful, I feel for you, and I feel still like this sometimes, but you need to bring that consciousness towards yourself and look at yourself with critical thinking again. Like, am I thinking straight? Am I thinking right? Or am I just being influenced? Or is it noise? Or is it just my trauma speaking through? through anxiety. And ultimately, if you get rid of things more, instead of adding more, you will realize that everything's fine.
It's all good.
Because when you know people from Africa, like my grandmother, she was born in a village in Algeria and went through war. They knocked on the door one day. They took her dad away. She never saw him again. And she went to France and she was peaceful and just zen and never a bad word and just alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, everything's fine. Thanks to God. Whatever that means for you, just humbleness and always giving. And I think that's the solution. You give more than you receive. And especially in the Bitcoin community, I've been confronting a lot of barriers when it comes to people getting interested in art, but they don't see the return on investment. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't see the return on investment? Like the narrative, it's important. Like if you don't do that now, then somebody's gonna do it. And then you are not in control of your own life. And then you are on that path and it's too late. Or you have consequences, right? And then it takes more effort in the future to go back to previous states of being. And the Bitcoin community, I see it as this beautiful melting pot and people from all over the world and different angles, but we need to all sit and have a conversation without judging each other. Because some people are early, they have more coins than you, and then they basically shit on you. Or if they don't, with words, you feel it. And when it comes to investing in my friends, in Europe, who are doing the right thing, in my opinion. Cypherpunks from the early age, like Satoshi's flame, as I like to call it, yeah. Keepers of that flame. But they don't make money, or they don't have a proper offer, or they smell bad, or they don't cut their hair, or whatever. They're not corporate enough, so they don't have a stage. They don't have investments. They don't have anything going on, and they're struggling.
Yeah.
So it's about being fair.
Yeah. You know? Well, it's interesting. You said, like, you know, giving more than you receive. And I'm reminded, I think it might have been Paul who said, you know, what have you received that you did not get from someone else? And it's an interesting concept. And I want to come back to what this means, though, for you. Yes. From an artistic perspective. Can you tell me a little bit more about 2140 Collective? What is that?
Yeah, so two founders, Anon, because he's Anon, and Mad Monkey. So I went to my first Bitcoin conference 2 years ago. That's when I started really living on the Bitcoin standard. And I met Mad Monkey, who's a woodworker, cypherpunk, living in a van with a coyote. It's not a dog, it's a coyote. So I saw God in his eyes, like the light and the love and the message. And he's just talking about the right things. And it's about the kids, and it's about Gaza, it's about freedom, it's about waking up people and bringing more love and unity in the world, right? So he's using Bitcoin and every single technology he can find to push that ethos. And Anon is more like the genius guy with a lot of ideas. And so they created 2140 a few years ago. I joined the two of them 2 years ago after my first conference, as I said. And then I was looking at Monkey and he was struggling a little bit. I'm like, okay, what do you need? We get in the van and I'll pay a little bit for the expenses and we go to all the conferences. So we've been doing that last year, going to Prague, Riga, showing up everywhere. And so official conferences, right? And you have those official after parties and we just organized non-official after parties, more cypherpunk vibe. And people started hearing about us, coming to those after parties, and you had OGs coming to us like, yes, this is it. Authentic, real. No bullshit, no sponsor, not trying to sell anything, just open source. We pull up with the art, we do it for the people, by the people, right? And we were bringing that vibe, and now we have this Bitcoin Culture Festival going on. Last year we did it for the first time in London. So the main party is during White Paper Day. So it's like a Halloween party, White Paper Day. And it's a whole week when we push the freedom tech, basically. So we talk a lot about Noster, how to set up a wallet. So for everyone, basically, we just adapt. And as you said, we meet people where they at. Art, we have also screening. I think this year we're going to screen a Dirty Coin mining documentary. And people should just check it out because we charge 2140 pounds for the ticket. It's a whole week. You have events that are free. When it's not the Bitcoin Culture Festival, we also organize events in London all the time, art galleries, meetups. It's not official. It's people for the people. So you don't have any wallet or company behind it. And if you want to support them, help them, participate in any way, you should and you could. So check them out. And I've been, for a year now, I've been traveling and trying to make it more global for the message, for 2140 in general, but for myself as well. And I think the message that we have is important. And I saw that it was lacking on the global scale.
So this is coming up October 31st this year.
Yes,
again.
Yes. It's in a whole week.
In London.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, that's incredible. And so we've got here at 2140, we believe that art, film, and music can creatively capture the essence of the Bitcoin movement, which is more than just a tech culture or financial revolution. It's a movement about a new way of living. And I think this is really interesting, man, because it sort of speaks back to this this expanded consciousness, I guess you could say. Maybe we can look at analogies in the past with something like the 1960s as kind of a revolution in the way people think about themselves. But I'm just wondering for you personally, are there any historical movements or art movements that have kind of factored into your view on all of this?
Well, I like to study and read a lot by myself at night. So I would say a lot of movements have inspired me, but any type of revolutionary movement, maybe reggae music and Bob Marley, what he did and the way he brought reggae music, which is basically not even Jamaican music. It's one specific spot in Jamaica, Kingston, and you have one neighborhood when reggae was born at. And then this guy, just this guy, because he was very, very gifted, made it just worldwide. And even now, we still talk about Bob Marley, and reggae music is a huge thing, right? So the reggae influence is very important because it's also rooted in religion and the way Rastafaris see themselves and the connection to God and the simple way of life. Like real Rastafaris, they just live on the mountain, smoke weed, yes, but not the same type of weed you find in dispensaries in Cali, right? Like it's just weed they find in the forest, and they communicate with God, spirits, they let their hair grow so that they have these antennas to communicate with the spiritual world. And they have this historical thing that we have been disconnected from the motherland, which is Africa, and we need to go back to that motherland. So it's not even traveling back there, it's more like spiritual. We need to go back to the roots that we were talking about, and the Messiah is going to come back one day and take us back to this motherland, right? So we are back into that concept of consciousness. And they are talking about the enemy, which is Babylon.
Babylon Man.
Yeah. Babylon Man. And then it became this propaganda again, and all these small gifts and T-shirts about Bob Marley. And if you look at his life, they tried to assassinate him at some point. And ultimately, he went worldwide into the industry, mainstream, and he became really sad about it. Because that wasn't his goal, money wasn't his goal. And you have this famous interview when he's been asked, are you rich? And he's just answering, what do you mean? Are you talking about money? It doesn't mean anything. So once again, if you are in Bitcoin and you're just talking about number go up, maybe ask yourself, what is money and what is it for? What is your goal and what are your intentions?
You know, Bob Marley, he came to New Zealand just once, Bob Marley and the Wailers, and a friend of mine photographed him. This was back in maybe 1970s, and just for a short tour around Auckland and New Zealand, and we had a good chat, and my friend, who's an older photographer, is telling me about, yeah, meeting Bob Marley and just sort of the ambiance, the energy that the man had about him, and this idea, though, of a motherland or a homeland. You know, this is really interesting because in a lot of ways in this modern world, you know, we're all very far away from home. What is home? You know, there's questions, you know, what is it that we do with our time? You know, we go to work, we work on these machines, and increasingly, I do sometimes wonder if this deification of AI is, in a sense, it's sort of like sort of bowing down before it, because it's taking your own kind of job if you're doing like emails and white collar stuff, you know. And it's like, well, there's just some imagery there that's quite interesting. Like your world is being flipped upside down, and arguably since COVID, you know, remote work, everything, the illusion is starting to fall away. Mm-hmm. What is work? What is value? The title of this show, The Transformation of Value. What does it even mean to do anything anymore? And I think a lot of people in their own ways are starting to ask these questions, right? And so in sum, it means it's a very interesting time to be an artist, though.
I think when you have times of transformation, like especially now when it's at the end of a small cycles, but also a bigger cycle, and we can talk centuries here. We're living in this very specific time, and I think it's an amazing time to be alive because everything is going down at the same time. So of course you can be coming from fear, exactly as we were saying, and then stress about everything, or just let go, come from a place of love, and then see the opportunity here. And as there is a transformation happening for humanity and the world in general, you can also transform yourself with intention, right? So that's exactly how I started going into the Bitcoin startup, more intuitively at first, maybe, but intentionally. And then, yes, I was working for retail fashion and manager and making good salary and being respected by my peers, blah, blah, blah. Opportunity to travel, and they paid for the hotel and everything. But if you keep doing that and the world is changing, you're going to be left behind. It doesn't matter if you are in a good place right now. So it's the same thing with Bitcoin, right? So as I was saying, AI and all the transformations in general, the only way is to create something. And that's the only way you can provide value. I'm not saying something material. It can be just ideas, book, whatever. But you need to come up with something that you want to produce and keep up with that and just put it out there, and not coming from the fear that we were mentioning, that, oh, I'm going to get judged, or I'm going to maybe not make money out of it. Like, it's not about that. It's about expressing yourself because you have something to say and you are good at something, and your personality. And if you are just brave enough to express that in the world, then you might influence one person, but that would be worth it.
Well, one way of framing that, and again, that I have compassion when I listen to people who maybe have collectivist tendencies. They talk about this. I think fundamentally there's in a lot of cases, people who, it's kind of a motherly, caring kind of an instinct that, oh, well, we need to look after people. I think it gets corrupted by ideology, though. But in a sense, though, I do have compassion there, because there are situations where, in the brutality of, say, the free market, which I think, you know, we can have critiques of, there's neoliberalism where, you know, unless you're an economic unit, you're useless. You're not even useless. You're nothing, because you're not producing economic value, right? I think there's ways of reframing that, as you say, maybe broadening this concept of value and looking at everyone playing their part. And this is kind of the society that we've almost turned our back on. What does it mean, you know, to have an elder or an older person to communicate and to lead younger people? What does it mean to have someone who's maybe less able yet still tries? And I think, I mean, this is kind of a challenging space to really understand what it means, but, you know, what does it mean to have communities working together, supporting each other, to have society again, which unfortunately has been supplanted by the ideology of the state in many cases, and this kind of everyone becoming basically little units.
Yeah, because the goal of the state here is to tax you, to keep the war machine going.
Just enough,
right?
Yeah.
So as a French person, I was questioning value for a while, because you have this whole image of your country that is based on history and the things that the state was willing to highlight, right? Like, oh, we had the royalty and all these paintings, and now it's owned by China. So what does it even mean, you know? So we had to sell it anyway. So it's not even French. So, okay, good. But when you look at the chances and opportunities that a young person like me, even with a master degree and all that, like you speak three languages and you have a master degree and you end up serving juices. And that's the minimum requirement for you to get the first job, and it doesn't matter. And if you don't have a master degree, you don't get the job. So that's the first thing, because that's the state of the economy in your country and the debt and all that. So we can get into the details of how it works, but ultimately you're producing value because you're working. Even when you're working, you're that unit, you're working. I was willing to improve my life, right? As a young person, and everybody's willing to have some more comfort and basic needs covered, right? So you're looking for ways, then you look for a business model, and you look like entrepreneur way, and in the fiat system, it's not possible right now.
Yeah, it's
in France especially, you get taxed so much, competitivity is like zero.
Yeah.
And you get taxed again on the money you pay yourself and
yeah.
What? And yeah. Then I hear stories about the government opening a new hospital and paying $3 million for the logo of the new hospital. And then you see it and it's AI generated.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, well, what is value? You have people, my grandparents, for example, this generation who don't understand. And they will blame young generations and, oh, you're just lazy and just get a job. And
yeah, it's a rigged game.
I can't win. So if I'm playing the game, I'm stupid.
Yeah.
I'm shooting myself in the foot.
Yeah.
And they don't see that because they were growing in different times. And for them in the 70s, for example, you had like golden age in France. And so perspectives. And I think value is perspectives. If you can have elders and disabled people and gay people and black people and everyone together bringing their own perspective and experience, there is value in that. Because I don't see it like you. I can. I don't have your life.
Well, fundamentally what you're talking about is liberal society. And it's interesting, like, this project of liberalism, and I think this is the critique that these Naomi Klein and these others were making, is that what we're seeing now in the left and the right, you know, labels, but this is kind of rejection of liberal thought, which is that, well, look, you just come as you are. You know, we have a arena in which we can engage each other, but fundamentally liberalism it respects that there are individuals and there is also a society. And I think maybe the dangerous path that we're in at the moment, and it is what it is, but we're starting to be like, okay, well, you have to do this, you have to do that. And I don't know, part of what I'm trying to do with this show is maybe talk to different people and kind of come back to fundamentally, like, what does it mean to engage with someone else, to have a relationship?
People don't do that anymore. They don't sit down and look at each other in the eyes. They're looking at their phone, exactly. Just coming back from Seoul, I was shocked by the state of their country, like at least just the Seoul itself. Everybody's on their phone all the time. And I mean, it's everywhere in the world right now, but in Seoul, I was shocked. Literally everywhere, all the time. And if they are not on their phone, they are walking with the phone in their hand. They never let go of the phone.
They call it the iPhone for a reason. It's the new ego. It's the new God.
It's crazy.
And you know, people once upon a time, they used to say the blessing before they eat their food. What do they do now? They take a photo. So I don't know, man. We find ways to reintegrate those things into our lives. And
yeah, because we are the same. Our brains are the same. And once again, you can't go against exponentials. So yeah, like you're just going to be washed away.
Yeah. Final question for you, Peter. I'm really interested in this idea of Bitcoin art. And obviously, you know, you've got the pin there. I can see on your chest there. It's quite nice. We can talk about Bitcoin art in a very sort of visual sense, you know, using the bees and the orange. I've got a couple of pair of orange trousers actually that I wear. But more broadly, how do we talk about Bitcoin without talking about Bitcoin? How do we make it into a broader movement?
That's when it comes down to sitting with people and asking the right questions, listening more than giving more than you receive. So giving attention to people. And let them talk. And if you're really listening, you can ask the right questions and see where they're coming from. And when you know a little bit more about their lives, then you can give them the right advice and meet them where they are. So, for example, in 2140, when we have meetups, sometimes people are coming with clear intentions. Sometimes they just walk in. Sometimes they are 80 years old. Sometimes they are 12 years old. So you don't just push the Bitcoin ethos or economics. And we have this problem right now. If you read the Bitcoin Standard, we understand it, and
it's part of the story. Yeah.
Yes, but some people, they are just not interested in economics, and you need to come from a very privileged place to actually sit down and think about the money you have to invest. And some people, they have $5 a day, and then you pay for whatever you have to pay for, and you don't have the space, or you don't even think about it, right? You're just struggling day to day. So it's about meeting the people once again. And you don't make it about Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is just the background. Bitcoin is just the tool. So it's like I'm trying to feed you, and I'm talking about my knives, right? Like, it doesn't make sense. You just want to have the food and eat it, and that's it. So it's about making it simple and cool and mainstream again. So to me, Bitcoin art is one thing. So of course you have the art galleries, and when you have specific skills when it comes to art, and you can be painting Michelangelo type of things, Da Vinci, you should do it. Because we need a renaissance in art, and beauty is needed definitely to inspire people, make them feel better about the world and the state of the world, because once again, narratives. So if you see beautiful things, then you will be impacted and you will feel better of yourself and everything and everybody around you. But you need to apply Bitcoin ethos to everything. The low time preference, the value for value. So if what happens to IKEA if it's becoming orange peel? What happens to Louis Vuitton once again if it's been orange peel? So that's when the real adoption is going to come. And I was trying to address this issue and make it big, and you realize that people are interested in that, the Bitcoin B, because they just want it to be cool. And it's part of the game, and game theory is just unfolding as we are speaking. But people who've been like us in the community for a while, they've been through their phase with the Bitcoin bees, and we all went there at some point, and oh, Bitcoin, talking about it a lot. And the more time you spend in that space, the less you talk about Bitcoin. That's what I've realized.
After all these years, man, I've found myself, I mean, I've got a few Bitcoin books here, but the ones I'm most interested in are the bigger questions: freedom, creativity, God. The freedom that you get when you start using Bitcoin enables you to do the work that you must do. And to stop short of that is to maybe turn your back on your own potential, but to actually go and say, okay, what is it that I need to do? What is my vocation? What is my calling? That's a great question we need to ask ourselves.
What is the role that I was meant to do here? Like,
why was I put on this earth?
What is the goal here, right? Am I just supposed to go to work every day and then consume some more and then do it again and again and again and more and more and more because I'm scared of death? Or am I supposed to make the world a better place with my own perspective, share that with my fellow humans, have a great time, good food, you know, like basic things, and simple values and love and community and sharing and giving and compassion and family and all these things. And once you are there, then you're in the forever now, heaven on earth. And the more people you bring onto that boat, then the better it is. Or we can just keep fighting each other and nuke ourselves, basically. That's fear or love, basically. And love is the cure. There's nothing coming out of fear that is ever good.
Love is the cure.
Yes.
Peter, if people want to follow your work, mm-hmm. where do you want to send them?
F0.pro is a good way to follow me. Don't mind the BTC Pay server, because I'm always struggling with that. But you can also check ivylumi.com. We just released an EP. Ivy Lumi is a singer-songwriter focusing on love and good vibes, Bitcoin being just the background of that. And 2140.wtf is a good way to follow the community as well.
Peter, Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. A pleasure.
Thank you for listening. I am Cody Allingham, and that was The Transformation of Value. If you would like to support this show, please consider making a donation either through my website or by directly tipping to the show's Bitcoin wallet, or just pass this episode on to a friend who you think may enjoy it. And you can always email me at hello@thetransformationofvalue.com.